This is Day to Day. I'm Noah Adams. If you're a surfer, would you head to Texas? An elite group of surfers on the Gulf Coast in Galveston Bay are riding big waves stirred up by oil tankers. The documentary film Step into Liquid profiled the surfers. That exposure has led to a flood of interest from surfers around the world. But as Stephen Cuevas reports, only a select few are ever granted access.
James Fulbright keeps having the same bad dream. Some choice waves are rolling into Galveston Bay. But when he gets to the beach, not only are there no killer swells, there's no water. It's the kind of nightmare that makes sense if you're a Texas surfer. While there are surfable waves along the Gulf of Mexico, they rarely reach any higher than a surfer's shoulder. And the surfing is only that good, maybe 9 months out of the year. That's why on most mornings, Fulbright, an entrepreneur and surf shop owner, and a hand-picked crew of surfers pile into a 17-foot boat and head out for the open water.
Up on, boys. All right.
I join three surfers, John Benson, Kit Keith, and Fulbright. All are tan, muscular, and share a boyish enthusiasm for surfing, and all are in their late 40s and early 50s. We're headed for the Galveston Bay shipping channel, where dozens of oil tankers from all over the globe pass daily. James Fulbright.
About 7 years ago, I was working in a surfboard fin factory, overheard a couple of sailors talking how they were constantly on guard, having to monitor getting swamped by these rogue waves that were breaking, actually, in the bay with no land in sight on these underwater shoals from the passing tankers.
Fulbright went out and bought every navigational map he could get his hands on. Then he bought a boat. After that came the tough part, getting local fishermen to tell him where these so-called rogue waves were.
They're all cranky old fishermen. They try to run us off, but eventually we got one guy to loosen up a little bit and tell us one particular place that was extremely hazardous, in his opinion. Hazardous means breaking waves to us. So we immediately went out to that location and just started sitting, watching passing tankers, learning about the tides, learning about the wind condition. I mean, there's a multitude of variables out here. It's not an easy task just to come out on a nice day and catch a wave. There's a lot of variables to monitor.
Everyone on board is an experienced boatman, and each surfer has eyes like a hunter. It's not easy to spot a potential wave. First, you have to know where to look. Fulbright has it narrowed down to about half a dozen places in the bay near the 30-mile ship channel. Then you have to pray for a consistent stream of tanker traffic. But the tankers have to be the right heft and be moving at just the right speed to form a good swell.
Is that one way up there, inbound or outbound?
Yeah, that's what I'm checking now.
We come out here and we kill time, we talk jokes, we read, we fish. So it's a science up to a certain point, and then it's a guessing game. So it's kind of neat just to come out and burn a whole day and just kill all that time between tankers talking crap.
You know, another thing that's funny is what we take for granted is how much money the guys that own these boats spend.
This is surfer John Benson.
You know, to make that boat travel by here, just the fuel itself, the equipment, the insurance, everything that they're having to pay for, and we're just soaking it up for free.
We're tapping into something that would normally go to waste.
So we kind of just act like we're out here fishing, but really, there's a lot of money that went into making that little wave, and we didn't have to spend a penny of it.
$20 in boat gas is about all we're in for.
This morning, for this select group of surfers, looks good. Tanker traffic is heavy. The boat doesn't get any closer than a few hundred yards from the ship channel, but even from that distance, the tankers seem to loom over us, five or six stories high.
This one, we're ready to rock and roll on this one.
Finally, in the distance, Fulbright spots a promising head of whitewater.
Well, we see the wave now. It's just appeared, so we're going to chase it down, drop the surfer out in front, and follow him. So here we go.
In a split second, the laid-back surfer vibe vanishes. Fulbright kicks the boat into gear and heads for the wave. As the boat picks up speed, it slams against the water over and over. Within seconds, Fulbright maneuvers into the path of the oncoming wave. He and Benson scramble for their boards.
Go, John.
Which one you want?
Just jump in, I'll throw you a board. Okay, go on. Get us out of here.
Benson and Fulbright paddle out while Keith pulls the boat alongside the wave so we can monitor the surfers and pick them up if they wipe out. The wave is moving fast and churning up a lot of white water. It's not tall, probably about 5 or 6 feet, but it's at least two or three city blocks long. It's followed by a set of two or three others. Unlike most waves rolling up the shores of Hawaii or California, these waves just keep going for miles. Surfers can ride them for over 10 minutes at a time. But this set isn't so friendly. In just over a minute, both surfers are bucked violently into the bay. Keith circles back to pluck them out of the water.
I got hit with the world, man. Huh? I got hit with the whole world at once.
Wave keeps going, Bubba. I had to lay there for a minute, you know, to get my bearings straight a little bit.
And it hit me from three different directions at once, man. I was swamped.
Typically, the first wave is the only wave. It's all that water surging on that first wave. Then there'll be a couple waves behind it. Occasionally, you can, you know, once you eat it on that first wave, it's real short distance between the two waves. If you're really fast, you can hustle into that second one and ride it for a little bit. And then I milked it on the third one on that go-round.
Make no mistake, this kind of surfing is difficult and dangerous. The water, like today, can be rough and unforgiving. The weather, unpredictable. Our trip is almost aborted when thunder starts to rumble in the distance. Fulbright turns down most requests from surfers wanting to come out here, mainly for safety reasons. But those who do brave these conditions are dedicated to the point of recklessness. John Benson separated his shoulder surfing the week before. And Keith, who didn't surf today, but has already returned to the water, is just recovering from a severe neck injury. To these guys, it's just the chance you take when you're a Texas surfer. James Fulbright.
The entire Gulf of Mexico from Florida Panhandle to the Bay of Campeche is flat as a lake right now, as we speak. Flat as a lake. There are thousands and thousands of surfers bitching and moaning, crying the blues. If they search for an alternative, they'd be surprised what they might find. We found this in our own backyard. We're out here surfing our brains out today.
But Fulbright isn't content to just leave it at supertanker surfing. He's already looking beyond the wild waves of Galveston Bay for his fun. He wants to try to take surfing indoors. He's putting all his energy and most of his money, including his kids' college fund, into a new business venture called Surf City, Texas. It would be the first surf park in the United States, and Fulbright hopes it'll be home to the perfect surfable wave. For Day to Day, I'm Stephen Cuevas in Galveston.